Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Author Paul Dalzell is known for his solid prose, his impressive knack for the crime genre. Paul has lived and worked in the Asia-Pacific region for nearly 50 years as a fishery biologist and manager. He comes from West Yorkshire, England, currently lives in Hawaii. His two previous novels, The Last Dream Before You Die and Everything Hurts, weave reality and legend about vampires and feature a retired detective, Jack Bone, who is befriended and helped by a vampire family. A subsequent novel recently published is The Friends of Eddie Relish, a modern-day thriller where a failed British actor finds a path to redemption and fame again as long as he keeps one step ahead of his enemies. On today's This Week in America, we discuss Paul's novel Pax Britannia, The Golden Anvil, a thriller set in a counterfactual history where an unknown organization threatens the British Empire by stealing and ransoming its atomic bombs. Now that I've got your attention, let's talk about it. Pax Britannica, The Golden Anvil, and author Paul Dalzell joining us on the program. Paul, welcome to the program, sir. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much, Rick. It's a pleasure to be on your program.
Looking forward to having the chance to talk about this book. First of all, I'm fascinated by your career. Mention you get to live in Hawaii now, which is not a bad place to live. Where else have you lived? Give us a little information about yourself. Where else have you lived other than Hawaii?
Well, I started off my professional career in Papua New Guinea, living in a small town on an island called New Ireland, and working on the tuna industry. And then I went from there to the Philippines for about 3 years, and then from the Philippines to New Caledonia, which is a French island. Some of your listeners may remember McHale's Navy.
Oh, yes.
TV comedy show was based there. And then, more latterly, sort of put roots down in Hawaii.
Well, an extensive travel background, and we're talking with Paul Dalzell from Hawaii about his new book. I understand you're a fishery scientist and have a large volume of technical papers, so writing, although a different style of writing, comes natural for you, doesn't it?
It does. I don't want to sound big-headed, but I've written a lot of big papers. I wrote a big paper on the Pacific Island coastal fisheries, published in an annual journal, and you know, even so, 20 years later, it's still being cited as the authority on coastal fisheries. And then, you know, a lot of big reports in Hawaii, you know, for the government, and you know these days, I mean, you can't, if you're in a federal institution, you can barely go to the bathroom without having to write sort of an enormous impact analysis.
Yeah, you got to document it before you do that. So writing is something that comes natural for you. What inspired you to take that talent and become a novelist?
The book that you were talking about, Pax Britannica, I've always been a huge, huge fan of the original James Bond stories by Ian Fleming. The books that I could pick up over and over again and read with a great deal of pleasure. I wanted to sort of do something a little bit similar. Fleming used the Caribbean a lot for his plots, and I thought, well, you lived in New Guinea for a long time. You're married to a New Guinea girl, or a New Guinea lady, and why not do that? And then, you know, my character, you know, Bond is a Scot. This character's Irish, so an Anglo-Celt. And just sort of to get around sort of historical points, I made this a virtual history or an alternative history where the British Empire is still very much larger in charge. And sort of technology at this time when it was written, when the story takes place, is more like the 1950s than the 2000s. It's the same thing has been used by other authors. A good example is Michael Chabon's The Yiddish Policeman's Union.
Yeah, Paul Dalzell is with us from Hawaii, talking about his new book, Pax Britannica. Before I mention that, this book is self-published. The book's available at all the usual places. You can link onto our website and get information about Paul's book and order it. Why did you decide to do the self-publishing route? What was it, the advantages that you saw in doing it this way?
What was that, sorry?
Yeah, you decided to self-publish. Why did you decide to do that? What did you say is advantages?
Okay, yes. Because I just got tired of hawking my wares, my books around literary agents in England and America. And I thought, well, all I'm going to be end up with is a pile of manuscripts sitting on a shelf. Or you take the plunge, be prepared to shell out some money, and at least your book gets published. At least some people will read it, and hopefully it'll entertain them. I always cite the example of J.K. Rowling, who I think went through 120 different publishers and literary agents before she finally got Harry Potter, up and running.
Which is just an amazing story and shows the fickleness, I guess, of the industry and the people who choose. With us is Paul Dalzell. That's Dalzell. Pax Britannica is the golden anvil. Is the name of the book we're talking about. And talk about what inspired you to use New Guinea as a location there. What was it about New Guinea? You mentioned your familiarity with that. What was it that made you decide that was the location?
Oh, sorry, Rick. Could you repeat that? I didn't quite catch it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. With New Guinea, the location, what was it that that made you decide you wanted to use New Guinea as the location?
Again, I'm losing you. I'm sorry about this.
Okay, that's not a problem. Let me ask that again. The location is New Guinea for the book Pax Britannica. What was it about New Guinea? Why did you choose that as the location?
Oh, well, yes. Because I knew the place, been there for about 10 years. I had my wife, Nellie, comes from there. And I, when you looked at literature in general, mysteries and thrillers, they don't tend to pitch up in the South Pacific much at all. And I thought, this is ridiculous, I'm nothing against the Caribbean. I'm sure it's a wonderful place, but the South Pacific Islands extend from Taiwan over to Easter Island. And New Guinea in particular is extremely interesting. It has, the rugged interior and very warlike tribes. And then on the coast, you have, where particularly my wife comes from, they think is the foundation of, what ultimately became the Polynesian populations out in the Central Pacific. So it's a key place. Plus also, you've got all the nasties that I describe in the book, particularly
yes.
Crocs and sharks.
It's interesting. You read the book. Is it true that everything in New Guinea, everyone in New Guinea is trying to kill you? It seems like it.
Yeah, that's probably a good it was a good exaggeration for the book, but it's not without foundation. Malaria will get you eventually. I know people that have had terrible intestinal parasites. I know people that came down with some kind of fever nobody knew about. There are, even on the coastal areas, it can be pretty dicey with people sometimes. And then when you go in the sea, oh my God, sharks. Saltwater crocodiles, sea snakes, all of them, the kind of things, you might see on a natural history film. But when you come face to face with a shark in the water, it sort of does tend to make you think maybe it's time to get out now.
Well, it's great reading, and you'll find that in the new book by Paul Dalzell, which is Pax Britannica, The Golden Anvil. The book's available wherever books are sold. You can link on by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us as well. things are tough in New Guinea, and then you've got the women there. Talk about them. You describe the women of the book. In fact, you mentioned married a lady from New Guinea. Are they as tough as you portray in the book?
Pretty much. I mean, a friend of mine once said that if he was going to, mount a revolution or some insurgency, the first thing you'd do is get a battalion of women from northern New Guinea, you know, like my wife's island and the neighboring island of Manus. They're very, very tough. They're very, very resourceful. And, they're not people that you want to cross. On the other hand, extremely delightful people. I mean, I know my wife and all her relatives. God knows we get big enough phone bills for calling them all, but there's some very nice people there, but also there's that underlying sort of toughness in the character, which you'd understand growing up in just 2 degrees south of the equator and with the heat and also all kinds of things that you just sort of getting food. You don't go to the ice box. You have to go out, either dig it out from the garden or go out to the reef and catch the fish.
Well, it's such a...
We can all do that.
What a fascinating life, and you can read all about it. This is a page-turner. This is a story that's receiving rave reviews, a book, The Pax Britannica, The Golden Anvil. Paul Dalzell is our guest on the program. The other two novels that I talk about feature Jack Bone of A Private Eye in your hometown of Leeds, by the way. It's a story of friendship, vampires. Talk a little bit about the stories and where the character came from and where this vampire fascination came from.
Well, if you read the original Dracula, he's on the ship Demeter when it comes ashore in Whitby, which is in Yorkshire. And he leaps off the boat in the guise of a big black wolf. And I wanted to ground the stories basically in Yorkshire, near where I come from. Leeds is only a hop and a skip from Bronte country, you know, the parsonage where the Brontes wrote their enduring fictions. And also poetry. And I thought, well, you know, what could we do about this? What could we do about have the vampires in Yorkshire? And then I thought, well, hardly any woolen mills are open these days. Why would one woolen mill be so successful? And of course, the fact is that it runs round the clock with vampires and humans. And then you have a spectrum of different types of people. You have people who are still human but don't age, and you have people who are human but have vampire genes, and then you have the full-on vampires. And the thing I wanted to try and sort of get at is that, again, you know, you've got very nice people, but, you know, in a flash they could be very unpleasant.
Yes.
I wrote this at a time when vampires seemed to be all the rage on television, with stories like True Blood. So I just wanted to present another alternative.
And it was received very well by the critics, as all of Paul's books have been. And I talk about the beginning of the book, The Friends of Eddie Relish. How did that come about to be written, and is it influenced by the Friends of Eddie Coyle, possibly?
Well, actually, this is the first work of fiction I ever did, but it did literally have a 20-year gestation period. It was first written by my friend and I, just exchanging emails, then turning it into a word document, and we came up with the name, and then I must have sometimes seen the title of The Friends of Eddie Coyle, but I certainly hadn't read it, and it certainly didn't really influence our book. But I think everybody who wants to write fiction, and particularly crime or mystery fiction, should read The Friends of Eddie Coyle by George Higgins. It's reckoned to be the greatest crime novel ever written, and the film, which starred Robert Mitchum, is also well worth checking out. That book, the first book was The Last Dream Before You Die. I always say I wrote that to prove I could do it, and then Everything Hurts, the second book, was to prove that the first one wasn't a fluke. And the second book also, you know, allowed more exploration of the sort of this little world up in the Pennines. You know, there are just small mountains that, you know, to the west of Leeds. And I also like I also brought in the Brontes, brought in even Bram Stoker, who was actor manager for, I can't remember the name now, but a famous Victorian actor.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So it was kind of fun to do that, you know, sort of, again, being an area of the world I'm very familiar with.
A couple minutes left in the program. What are you working on now? I'm sure you have projects that you're giving some attention to.
Yeah, I have effectively finished a manuscript, which has the running title, He Might Still Be on Mars. And it's set in 2586. There's nothing special about that date and year, but I wanted somewhere about 600 years in the future. And in it, you know, humans have sort of expanded out to about the asteroid belt, but they've managed to sort of get light ships that travel at like 1/10 to 1/2 of light speed, and then there are several ships that do travel above the speed of light, and it's you know, there have obviously been some huge technical advances, but on the other hand, you know, you strip those away, as happens in the book, and, you know, you're reduced just to being another half-naked skeleton scrabbling for your life. I also wanted to sort of think about the ideas about androids, synthetics, and then cyborgs, humans with synthetic abilities. And again, it has some ideas that might be taken away from the book, as well as just being a jolly good read.
Well, it sounds like it will be on a number of levels, and I'm looking forward to that to be released here. I've got a minute or so left. I do want to ask you about, you're both, optimistic, pessimistic about the world, and China features very heavily in both of your books. Do you see China as a threat, maybe ultimately leading the world?
I think the short answer is yes, probably. But not in a strictly military fashion. I think it will dominate the countries immediately around it, as it already has thrown its weight behind, for example, the Spratly Islands, which are claimed by a number of different countries, and they're really just off the Philippines, but China's got in there, you know, and said South China Sea, yeah, well, you know, we're taking these islands. And of course, no one's got a navy in the region apart from the US who could stand up to them. I think we'll see them come to dominate more and more in Africa, where I think there's a million Chinese living in Africa now, certainly a very, very high number there on you know, being brought there for construction.
Yes.
Projects. And I just think that, you know, they've got this Belt and Road system that they're very, they're very pleased about. So I think it's a case of, it won't be entirely some kind of military domination. I think it'll end up being, China will be the sort of, will have this amazing web of interconnections by which it is able to influence and bring its will to bear on most of the countries in the world.
Well, interesting observation. With us on the program is novelist Paul Dalzell. That's D-A-L-Z-E-L-L. The book we're talking about in particular, Pax Britannica, The Golden Anvil. You'll find the book, of course, at Amazon, the usual places. Go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You'll be able to link on directly to information on all of Paul's books. Paul, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Looking forward to having you back, talking about more of your exciting novels. Thank you for being with us on the program today. A pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Rick. It's been a great pleasure. I like to talk about my books, as you see, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I like to listen to you talk about your books. It's fascinating. So this worked out very well for both of us on the program today and the audience as well. Paul Dalzell, our guest. Again, that's D-A-L-Z-E-L-L. If you're going to Google, go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Link on directly to information on Paul's books. We are back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.